time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you here. It's Monday, November 25th, Thanksgiving week. What are you grateful for? One of the things I'm grateful for is to have you as a listener. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals, and it's for mortgage professionals. That's you, our listening audience, and we're just so thankful to have you as our listeners and sharing the message of what we're trying to get out here around the industry. We are so widely listened to, and we're so grateful. It's been only accomplished by you sharing it virally. So thank you. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Today's hot topic, we're continuing down the M&A topic. We've got Mark Jensen, who will be here. He's CEO of Town Mortgage Company, and he'll be talking about some interesting strategies and tactics about growing and expanding your mortgage company through M&A. Looking forward to that conversation with Mark. Also, I want to say we're proud to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. They're a great organization. Check out all the podcasts on industrysyndicate.com. Some news from our friends at Black Knight. Mitch Cohen, Director of Public Relations and Marketing and Communications at Black Knight, sent this over. We saw some real strong improvement in the national delinquency rate, now down 3.8% from September and down 7% from last year. At 3.39%, the delinquency rate is now within 0.3%, 3 basis points of the record low set in May. Serious delinquencies, those that are more than 90 days delinquent, but yet have not gone into foreclosure, continue to improve as well. Those are down 10,000 seriously delinquent loans from last month and 66,000 from last year. There are now only 433,000 serious delinquencies, and that is more than a 14-year low. For more information, check out Black Knight at blackknightinc.com. Very grateful to our friends at specifically Mitch Cohen, Director of Public Relations and Marketing and Communications at Black Knight, for sharing us the information. Let's get into thanking our sponsors. So grateful for our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. What a wonderful partnership we have with them, and encourage you to have a partnership with them if you're not already a member. As well as Black Knight, they have this actionable intelligence platform delivering data that drives growth and reduces costs. Go check it out at blackknightinc.com. They're doing some really exciting stuff there. Talk to Tyler Sherman. We're going to have him on as a guest to just kind of give us some insights into what they're doing with the data. Super exciting. Anyway, also, thank you to Scott Gordon. I was texting him last night. He's up in Big Sky snow skiing. Oh, I don't think that was a secret. Hope not. Anyway, he's up there enjoying the snow-cold country of Big Sky. He's got his boards on skiing today. I'm sure he's listening to this. Do you think he's listening to this while he's on the slopes? Maybe, maybe not. Anyway, check out their reverse mortgage programs. They're very aggressive. Scott just came back from the NIRMLA conference, which is the reverse mortgage conference, and just really encouraged by some of the things that are going on in that space. Encourage you to check it out. Check out all the videos he has on his website. Also, Finastra, FusionBot solution, automatically addresses compliance issues while delivering enhanced borrower satisfaction and increased productivity. We did two webinars this last week on behalf of Finastra, one to the American Bankers Association and one to the Independent Community Bankers Association. Went really well. I'm so excited about the partnership with them. And also, we're introducing you to more and more independent mortgage bankers and about their MortgageBot POS and their MortgageBot LOS. You need to check this out, folks. It's really a strong system. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, both of these mortgage co-ops create competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. Thrilled to be a part of both of these co-ops. Lenders One, which you can check out at lendersone.com, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative, TMC. Grateful to be part of it. And also CMLA, which is the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Thrilled to be in affiliation and partnership with them, as well as Velma, as well as KnowledgeCoop, Vidyard, AI Assist. Gosh, I love what they do with their AI program. So check out AI Assist We have all of them listed on our website. Then a special thank you goes, of course, out to Alice, Andy, Alan, Joe for their contributions to this podcast. And I might just say I am so grateful and thankful for their contributions each and every week. Let's get over to Rob Van Raphorst with what he has for us this week with the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, Congress passed and the President signed a short-term funding bill to fund the government until December 20th. Embedded in the bill was a temporary reauthorization of the National Flood Insurance Program. Next, Congress will work on a long-term funding bill. Also last week, the CFPB released its fall 2019 agenda, which included a review of the Loan Originator Compensation Rule. This is the first formal acknowledgement by the Bureau that it views LO Comp as a priority. And finally, after 18 months of industry and regulator preparations, the Mortgage Loan Originator Temporary Authority Law went into effect on Sunday, November 24th. MLOs who meet the strict eligibility requirements in the federal statute will be able to work in any state for 120 days if they have applied for a license and completed their education and testing requirements. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate the partnership with you and you giving us this information, as well as the partnership with the MBA. Also, while you're at the MBA website, folks, be sure to go out and get registered for the Mortgage Action Alliance. Learn all about it. A lot there. A lot of great information. Of course, you can listen to Alice Alvey's segment. We have a lot, but it doesn't replace having your voice being heard. So get the information from Alice, what's going on, and then make sure you send in the letters to your senators. So easy. Download the app and click, and it's done. Les Parker is here with this week's TM Spotlight and his macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by Ainsworth Advisors. So check on the G4 sale. See how the growth sales set. Japan reports slow growth. Check. Australia reports slow growth. Check. Asia reports slow growth because China slows. Check. Check. Germany and other European economic data confirms weakness. Check. Check. The Fed and the other central banks continue to attempt to calm the markets with an ocean of liquidity. All the noise and little action make trading a bear. Why don't banks leave markets alone? This is the worst trip they've ever been on. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Oh, I love that song. Remember that so well. Brings back some good memories from yesteryear, Joe. Yesteryear.
Yeah.
You remember that? When we get older, I remember it like yesterday. I loved the Beach Boys. I was living in Minnesota. I wanted to be a Southern California guy.
I could see
it only
that.
Took me until I was 38 years old to get there, but loved my time in SoCal, but loved my time here in Austin even more because I get to meet guys like you. What you got for us this week?
Well, you know, it's a short week, not a lot going on other than in the stock market. We've had a continuation of the rally this morning. We're up 125 points or so with the Dow sitting right at 28,000. The nice thing about this movement is that it's a reaction to something that China has done regarding the trade discussions. They have tightened restrictions on stealing intellectual property. That's a big step. If it's for real, and it turns out to be enforced, that's a big step toward maybe reducing the conflict that the U.S. and China have had regarding trade. So that was a big step. And then the pro-democracy vote in Hong Kong was another favorable thing for the market this morning. So good day for the stock market. Unfortunately, there's been no negative reaction in the bond market. MBS prices are pretty much flat for the day. Yeah. Looking at last week, Dave, it was a pretty quiet week as well. Neither stocks nor bonds moved too much last week. No real surprises in what we heard in headlines from discussions with China. There are no surprises in the Fed meeting minutes from the October meeting. And the economic data was pretty much in line with expectations. So it really was a pretty quiet week with MBS prices ending just about exactly where they started the week. The housing data that came out last week, which including housing starts and existing home sales, both exceeded September, but not by as much as the market expected.
So, it helped, yeah.
But it still showed an improvement. Consumer sentiment was a little better than expected. So the bond market this week, as I mentioned, is going to be closed early. They're going to close on Thursday, and then we'll close early on Friday at 2 o'clock Eastern time. Typically, weeks like this, the volume's a little light, which can cause some market volatility, overreaction in markets. So good to pay attention. The significant economic data that comes out will come out tomorrow and Wednesday, really nothing on Friday. The data tomorrow is going to be consumer confidence and new home sales. And then on Wednesday, some little more significant items to pay attention to. First, we'll get a second look at the third quarter GDP, or gross domestic product, that's going to be released at 8:30. And no change from the first estimates expected. GDP is expected to continue to show third quarter growth at 1.9%. And then at 10 o'clock, Dave, the October core PCE, or core personal consumption expenditures, will be released. And that's an important inflation indicator. It's also expected to show no change from the prior month, remaining at 1.7% on an annualized basis, just like in September. So short week, short presentation.
It is going to be a short week, short information, but, you know, takes one tweet. China, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, really.
What's really interesting is that the market isn't reacting more to what these hearings, and I take that as a good sign. So I think people are going, yeah, we see this as politics. There's not a
foregone conclusion that if it gets out of the House, it's not going to get passed in the Senate. So why worry about it?
Exactly. Except for those that just got to just grind on something, they throw some meat to the bones or to the lions on that group. But anyway, yeah, that's encouraging. That's good. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. You staying home for Thanksgiving? Are you going to fly out and see that grandbaby of yours?
Not going to see the grandbaby, and going to come out to your neighborhood. Spend the weekend with Sarah's family
at the lake. Oh, wonderful. Well, greet your family. Grateful for you, and thank you for, very thankful for you and your contribution each and every week for many years.
Thank you
10
for
years
including me.
Oh, are you kidding? I can't imagine doing it without you. Appreciate you so much. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
You bet. Bye-bye. Let's get over to Scott Gordon with the science of sales.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. Last time we examined the first element of a story, a relatable hero. Today I want to examine the next essential element every story needs, a relevant challenge. The challenge is the obstacle or opportunity your hero faces. For example, a company. One of your competitors, perhaps, could be the obstacle. A particular situation could be the challenge. These are gold mines for scenario-based stories. The economy, another gold mine for stories for millennials and seniors alike. Robbed of their ability to purchase a new home if it were not for you. Please note, your challenge does not always have to be negative. An opportunity, for example, could be the challenge to which your hero rises. Without a challenge or obstacle, your stories are boring and useless. Let's take a look at a series of escalated challenges. Sally goes to the store, who cares, to buy some groceries, still don't care, for her 5-year-old daughter, Carolyn, who is sick and hasn't eaten in days because her home was robbed. Their food and emergency money were taken, and her paycheck from her second job will not be deposited for another 3 days. Okay, now I care. It's up to you to understand the purpose of the story and scale the relevant challenge with what your relatable hero is capable of, as well as serving the overall message of your story. Challenges face both you and your borrowers on a daily basis. Make note of them, harness them, and make them your own to turn yourself into a story-selling machine. Remember, crafting effective stories is a science. There are formulas to follow that will yield measurable and proven results. It's not magic. It's the science of sales.
Yeah, the science of sales. I tell you, I wrote some of the best cover letters. They're always based on the facts, but it helped me get so many tough loans through. I tell you, it just was one of those things. And I learned about storytelling when I was a loan originator, not just getting the business in the door, but getting it approved. Alice Alvey is here. She's CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, and she's got this week's legislative update. And I want to say, Alice, thank you so much for being here. I'm grateful for you and your husband, the friendship we developed over the years, and your contribution that's so rich in content each and every week. You never disappoint. Appreciate you. What you got for us?
Oh, thanks, Dave, and thanks to you and all the listeners. They may not realize how much work you go through to pull this program together. And anyway, I'll move on to the infamous URLA Fannie Mae Freddie Mac, well, Title 3, Freddie 65 form that we were postponed. If you remember, it was supposed to be implemented here very shortly,
right.
And it was postponed. There's a little bit of discussion going on now, Bryce, with the agencies to have it be, the next deadline be November 1st of 2020, and they're looking for some industry feedback. My personal feedback is just, you know, we lived through TRID. It was very difficult to implement something where your summer busy season was your testing window. So when you have an October 30th, November 1st date, you have to pull it all together, you know, through your busy summer months as being your kind of final ramp-up months. So it would be, I think, advantageous to move it all the way back to January 1st, but we'll see what they actually do. We'll keep you posted. Just to keep us all on our toes, House Bill 4783 was introduced to require that the agencies collect a preferred language option through the 1003. So, you know, this is what keeps happening. We think we've got a final form, and hopefully we can get this done and done before any legislation comes through that says we want the customer to check off their preferred language. That makes it very difficult for a lender to have a preferred language question in there, because once you say, I'm willing to take the application in X language, pick any language, you now need to service it. Everything from A to Z now needs to be available in that language. It's not just, I'll just take your application and then I can switch back to English, you know, when we hit servicing or when we hit closing. Everything has to be made available. So it's a big endeavor to try and give a language option. So it's not that no one wants to be able to offer customers the services that they need, but making it a mandated question makes it difficult. So just one other couple quick heads-ups for everybody. You heard Rob Van Rapphorst comment on the temporary authority now in place. Just the way that his report was so quickly phrased, I want to clarify one thing. You do need to meet the basic requirements to be eligible for a license, such as not having had a bankruptcy or a felon. You do need to watch individual state requirements as well that can lay on top of this. And there's a few states that are causing some challenges with transitional licensing, and I should say temporary authority, right? So you have temporary authority to be able to take a loan application until you are licensed. It is not a temporary license. And you get the 120 days to take your education or your test. So you have to pass certain criteria. You have to actually apply with that state, and you have to be employed, and then you get the break to be able to take applications. So it really is a big win for those of you who consider moving from a bank to a lender. Really does give you some breathing room to take that training and pass that test. So one last reminder, the VA Blue Water bill with the funding fee, you really want to watch your pipelines right now. Funding fees are going to increase after the first of the year, and this is based on the closing date. So watch your applications in process. Make sure you're being very attentive to your veteran borrowers and get them closed before the end of the year. This will make a big difference in the cost of the loan. So that's my report. Dave, back to you.
Good job. Excellent. Appreciate you so much, Alice. Be sure to greet that amazing guy you're married to. Really appreciate Andy. Appreciate Andy and you and your friendship. Thank you so much.
Thank
Grateful
you.
For you. Enjoy you.
Thank you.
Alan Pollack's here with the tech update. Alan, what are you doing? I forgot. Alice and I were talking before we got on air and talking about what we're going to do for Thanksgiving. And I know you got a great neighborhood. Ken Jones lived in your neighborhood. You got all these people that live in that area. And so it's like, do you like have like a mortgage party? Like, is it a mini mortgage conference in your cul-de-sac there?
No, but I'll tell you what. Years ago, when I first moved to Florida, I did do my first Thanksgiving with somebody who worked at in secondary at Everbank. So that was fun. When I moved here, I couldn't believe how many people were in mortgage and just banking in general. This is a very big hub for that. But, you know, you sort of teed me up just to make a quick comment that Ken, myself, and a couple others, Tom Alon's out here, a number of us have talked about getting together. So if you're in the northeast side of Florida, Jacksonville, St. Augustine, even Daytona, Palm Coast, and you want to get together on a frequent basis and just talk mortgage shop, especially technology, but all things mortgage, feel free to reach out to me. We hope to get a bunch of people together on a more often, more frequent basis.
Fun.
So, David, one, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And I thought I'd start us off with something kind of interesting, you know, ending last week on the human element of technology, some interesting stuff. So, of course, I went to Google, our trusty friend, and I found that one is if you're looking for a turkey and the stores are out of them, you can get yourself a Bluetooth turkey call app, and that will help you hunting. So, you know, and there are over 50 different apps. Some of them do everything from help keep you warm. Some of them help track the distance that you shoot. I mean, it's this stuff's just crazy. And so then I thought, well, let's just say you went to the store and got your turkey. You can get yourself a Bluetooth turkey thermometer. You put the turkey in the oven and you just sit around and wait, and it will update you real time
notify
the temperature of the turkey. So that got me thinking, and I took a look. You know, Amazon reviews are always the absolute funniest. I took a look, and I went right to just a food thermometer. This has like six different probes. You can put in different kinds of meat depending on how you would like to have it cooked. And I, of course, went to the 2 stars. And some of these reviews are great, David. Not very accurate, not wireless. The probes don't last long. Meh, works, but subpar Bluetooth. So anyways, you know, the human element of technology is that, especially in this one meat thermometer, is that it the picture doesn't show wires on the probes, but a lot of the reviews are that it comes with wires. You know, be warned. That leads us into our big topic for today. And it is a slow week, as Joe was mentioning. There's not much in the news. A couple small things have happened. I'll just tell you two of them. One was Ginnie Mae. They've announced that they're using eOriginal for their eVault services. It's going to be a beta. They're hoping to continue their efforts to digitize that entire process. And then FormFree also just rolled out pay stub collection and verification as a new feature for existing customers. And that's part of their new product as well. They're partnered with LexisNexis and digital mortgage application pre-fill solution is what they call it. And so, right, we've talked about this the last 2 or 3 weeks. There's a bunch of folks going down that path. And then the last quick news update before we get a little bit deeper into humanization of tech, Maxwell also announced they have a partnership with Fannie Mae where they now have the availability of DU. And, you know, that's really important, David, as we've been talking about some of the capabilities of things we're looking to put in front of a borrower. The better, the sooner, faster that you can give that borrower an experience. By the way, should they want to go down that path, right? Let's not force them there. But the faster you can give them a good experience to know if they're approved or can they move forward or curtail or customize that experience, the better. And so that's a very big thing. So hats off to Maxwell on that piece. Now, let's get back to humanization of technology. I mentioned last week briefly this magazine article, entrepreneur.com. They had this title, and, you know, it's pretty interesting, David. It's labeled like this: and due to all the new technology, we crave convenience beyond our conventional needs, right? Who wouldn't say that we don't crave convenience? Actually, there's an article at Pew Research saw that said disconnecting from the network, you know, our social world, would mean disconnecting from much of society. No hospital care, no TV, no news services, no telephone. Some would attempt it, but most will not, right? So we crave this convenience. We're connected to everything. And ultimately, what I learned at this Entrepreneur magazine is, you know, we need to do a better job, and we need to learn about the human needs and the emotion and behavior that's there. And technology is just a means to actually enable that. But technology will come and go, and the human need is what stays constant. And so what they really talk about, and if you think about our industry, it falls in line so perfect. Whenever we interact with digital channels, we consume information. We browse for products online to purchase or try new technology. Basically, David, we demand it to be more natural or faster. Otherwise, we just move on. How many times have you searched for something on Google and after the first page of results come up, you maybe go to the second page, but you don't go to the third page, right? You move on. You modify your search terms.
That's right.
You think of something different.
True.
That's right. And so what this article says, which is great, think about this. And as a result, our attention span has gone lower than a goldfish.
Yes.
Our brains
and
are
adjusting. So sad. So true.
Our our brains are adopting and changing in the presence of technology. You know, I found another article on Forbes that just mentions so much stuff that's so related. You know, technology also opens up just more unforeseen issues. And we as humans are really necessary for solving the problems that automated services can't. I'll give you an example. You know, for those that know my background, for years I was involved in automated OCR and pricing technology and underwriting technology. The reality is that you stick a 1003 in there, and if the technology doesn't recognize some of the pages at the end or the takeout order menu, one page got slipped in with the 1003, because people are still scanning today, by the way. The technology doesn't always know what to do,
and so
we'll just see it as another 1003. We can label things that we've got AI, machine learning. The reality is we are humans. We program the technology, and we as humans create mistakes ourselves. So we need to be there to fix those mistakes. Technology's not going to just fix it right away. And so there's this new person out there. It's called a chief human officer. So if you're looking to add this to your company, go ahead and Google it. Chief human officer.
Hmm.
And their job is to keep it simple, reduce complexity, and advocate real human inclusion. And so as you head into the Thanksgiving holiday and you go hands off and feet up to Bluetooth cook your turkey, you can think about your borrower point of sale solution, and you'll remember to humanize.
Humanize. It's so good. I still stick with the wired one. Somehow, sticking a Bluetooth device into a refrigerator, I'm just not so sure. So I still use a wired one. But I've got something that does work, and it works well.
That's great.
So I love that. I got it comes out and goes into a device, and it's wired than Bluetooth, and so I could be anywhere in the house. And that's good. Anyway,
absolutely.
So good. All right, my friend. Appreciate you. Have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy that beautiful family.
You too.
Got some beautiful daughters, so I know you'll have fun with them. Are they all cooking? Did they hit your daughters hit the kitchen?
Yeah, they
with your wife like mine
do.
It's just like
out.
I love it. Sitting
and
at the bar
take pride,
and they take pride in it. Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
So much fun. Well, enjoy it, friend. Appreciate you so much. Thankful for you, Alan, for being here each and every
and
week.
Likewise.
Appreciate it so much. You bet. When you talk about technology, Finastra has the mobile bot mortgage app. It just creates a new experience. And it's what's so interesting about this app is it actually connects directly to the database. It's not a web version. A nice thing you can do is you can put your brand in it, your fonts, your color schemes, everything else, and you're in business. It's simple to use, straightforward. I encourage you to check it out. Like we say, it's best of all, it's faster than a rocket. You know what I'm referencing. Be sure to check them out. I love my friends over there at Quicken and Rocket Mortgage, a great company. But you need to learn how to compete, folks. And it's, you know, you can't create all the technology. You got to find someone to partner with. That is what I would suggest you do. Dan Putney and the folks there at Finastra do a great job of getting you the latest technology where you can stay focused on your business. Well, we normally would jump over to the Profit Doctor, Dr. Andy Schell. He is going to be with us on the download version, but he's not here live.
So, Dave, you're talking about M&A. So I wanted to highlight some of that. First off, I was just curious, Dave, do you have a crystal ball?
Yeah, but it's got a lot of snow that flies. I shake it, it's snow in it and a snowman.
See, that's part of the challenge with M&A is that a merger and acquisition transaction is looking into the future. But we're also looking into the past and then guessing about what could be. It's like we're looking for the pot of gold at the end of the runway. We're looking for the unicorns running around in the field at the end of the rainbow. So looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So the challenge with any M&A transaction is uncertainty. Uncertainty is the evil aspect of M&A. We hate uncertainty. Businesses hate uncertainty. Overcoming uncertainty is a significant challenge, and that's what we try to accomplish, and that's why accounting is so important in these types of events, and even preparing for a future potential might happen M&A. The way that we help reduce uncertainty is by having details, have lots of granular information that is used to help manage the business. Now, ultimately, a sustainable merger and acquisition transaction is like an arranged marriage. Notice, not just a marriage, it's like an arranged marriage. Sustainable M&As are like arranged marriage where the family looks at the family dynamics, the life history, the culture, and then puts that all together. But then the price of the M&A is driven by future profit. That's the thing that makes the money. Where's the money come from? Sustainability is about culture. Profitability is about the price. So profit measurement comes from accounting. And as we all know, accounting is the language of business. So you got to have good accounting. So how to do this? Thinking about doing it in a year? What do you want to do? You want to position yourself for good M&A? It's all about operational dynamics and financial performance. So a well-run organization is able to provide, you know, expansive performance reports. How did you do? What's your turn time by underwriter? What's your apt to close by originator? What's your fallout by branch? What's your fallout by originator? All this stuff is super important, along with loan-level profitability. What's your profit by originator? What's your profit by branch? What's your profit by product? All this stuff you got to know. If you know all this stuff, you're going to be a well-managed organization, and that's going to really help with an M&A transaction, because the more you know about yourself, the more easily the buyer can learn about you. And that's essential. That helps to minimize the uncertainty, because you can show a buyer, hey, look, I have all these tracking reports. I've done all this process improvement. I have all this profitability. I manage branches by profitability. I know which ones are great. So if the more well-run a company is, the better the M&A transaction's going to be and the higher the price. So reducing uncertainty increases the price. Demonstrating stable revenue increases the price. Also, having robust governance, having somebody who watches. So when management is accountable to somebody, board of directors, board of advisors, whatever it is, the family get together once a month, whatever it is, accountability helps to drive performance and helps to reduce uncertainty. Those are always really important. Now, here's the mistake people make. Rapidly increasing volume, adding a whole mess of branches, significantly changing up your operational design, all that increases uncertainty, and that will actually reduce the M&A price. That's bad. You don't want to grow rapidly. You want to have a nice steady pace and have really clean operations with good performance data. The point ultimately is great accounting and operation performance reports will help in an M&A transaction, and the more the buyer knows, the more likely you are to have a price. If you can avoid a substantial uncertainty discount, your price will be higher. Those are just facts. That's how it is. That's how it works. Ultimately, it comes down to certainty and cash flows.
And I might throw in, when it comes to M&A, if you're looking to know what your company is worth, the Profit Doctor, he has more letters behind his name than he has letters in his name. He's a CPA, CFF, what else? PhD.
MBA, MSML, and most importantly, CMB, Certified Mortgage Banker.
Banker, yes. And now PhD. So very good. That's
thanks, Dave.
More, I always love teasing you. More letters behind your name that's in your name. Anyway, good job. Appreciate that. We're going to add that on our show next week. We cover that. Appreciate it, Dan. Shell, if you want to get a hold of more wisdom, Andy does do some. That's the only person we refer to when it comes to evaluations, what your company's worth. It's Andy Shell and Chuck Klein. They do a great job. Chuck does a lot of M&A. Give him a shout out. He does a great job as well. So a lot of activity in that. Now, if you're listening to this podcast live, you just stay right on in. We're going to roll right into the Hot Topic segment. But if you're listening to this on a downloaded basis, this wraps up the mortgage update, the first half of our live podcast. You can listen to this on a downloaded basis. We add some extra stuff into it, so be sure to go back and listen to it, even those of you who listen to it live. So without further ado, let's get into the Hot Topic segment for this week. Folks, I'm excited to have Mark Jensen here with us today, and joining me on the podcast is Les Parker, and we're going to be talking to Mark about some of his plans to grow his business. It's something a lot of company leaders, CEOs, are looking to do. So, Les, good to have you on the podcast here with me, friend.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's great to be with you, and it's really exciting to have Mark Jensen with us, who's the CEO of Town Mortgage Company up in Michigan. And they want to be a company that really leaves even a greater mark than another big company that's up in the Detroit area that they want to rival. And I think there's ways that they want to accomplish that through processes, through technology, through organic growth, through mergers and acquisitions. But Dave, I thought we would like to kind of hear from Mark in terms of how he describes his company and kind of how they're moving forward and in this market that seems to have a lot of consolidation going on.
Yeah. Mark, talk about some of your plans and strategies.
Well, Les, David, glad to be on. So, you know, I came into the company last December. Fun time to join a company that was struggling a little bit. And honestly, the first task that I had was really to kind of assess the management and leadership strengths. And when you're looking at growing, right, you need strong managers, strong, knowledgeable leadership. And the good news, quite frankly, was, you know, our operations, our risk, our secondary groups were led by, you know, very strong, seasoned industry executives. So that was a plus, right? The foundation for growing, obviously operations, one of the key foundations. The negative was sales, you know, was a different story. And right off the bat, we needed to look at making wholesale changes in the sales area, and no pun intended there. And what we've done to date is, from an organic standpoint, we've essentially eliminated all sales leadership back in January. And we've hired a national sales leader, John Korch, who comes with 30 years of diversified experience in the business, sales and operations and secondary and finance. More recently, Mark Zierot, who heads our TPO sales effort. Also, Mark, over 30 years experience, but his experience focused on the third-party origination business. And also Bev Abiantun as a leader, a Midwest regional director in TPO. And again, another individual who comes with 30-plus years of sales experience in the mortgage world. So from a reset-the-page organic standpoint, you know, several additions to the senior management team, and actually several additions at the mid-level management team to strengthen the bench to date.
A lot of people are looking at their executive teams, and they're looking at, does the team I have or the team that we have currently here help us get to our goals and objectives? Talk a little bit about the process about assessing the previous team and why you had to make the changes that you did.
So in assessing the previous team, just taking a look at how, honestly, they were blocking and tackling. So, you know, the blocking and tackling and operations, what did the processes look like? Were the processes working? Look at average turn times, look at throughput, look at loans underwritten per underwriter and what their metrics looked like, and using, you know, other companies to a large degree in terms of benchmarking that. So a lot of looking at the processes that each of these areas had in place, and secondary the same thing. And was it working, and how did it compare to what I was used to in my past lives and what the industry was looking at, you know, today?
Are you seeing in the current climate that there is a shift in what is going to be successful as executive today as far as what was in the past? Obviously, you recognize the need for change there, but you've had many years in the business. You've worked for some very large companies, been very successful in the industry. Talk about the change that's necessary as companies need to grow. What are things that other CEOs need to consider?
Well, you know, first and foremost, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, even 10, 15 years ago, everybody worked in the office that housed operations together.
Yes.
You know,
as a
team. And, you know, times have changed. So dealing with how to manage remote workforces in terms of getting the quality production, getting those groups to work as a team, despite the fact that they may not be in the office every day. That's, I think, a critical component in our industry today.
There seems to be a new virtual reality, Mark, in the way companies are going. Talk about that and what you're recognizing and the reason you're taking Town Mortgage Company in a different direction.
To the extent that you're not offering virtual to your employees, it is very difficult in today's environment to get those key, experienced, successful leaders to join your organization because they can find somewhere else to work that will offer them virtual. So what I've seen the last several years, more so in the last year than anything, are employees that you want to hire, right? Successful people, people that know what they're doing, are grounded in the industry, wanting to work for you if they can't at least work remote some portion of the week. So we're seeing it more and more. I would say every single person we've interviewed for a position in the last several months has asked that question. Do you allow remote work?
I love the concept of remote working. Obviously, It's something that a lot of us do. Les and I both work on a remote basis, and I think it's something that more and more companies are finding a value. First of all, from a cost standpoint, it reduces cost, and like you said, you can hire more people with greater skills, and they're willing to join your company if they do not have to relocate. I think that's a real key. What are some other trends that you're seeing in the industry today, Mark, that are different than what was in the past?
So I think history repeats itself to some degree. What I've seen and what I expect to continue seeing is a shift towards the broker world, the wholesale world. We saw it, you know, back in the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and then that world was, you know, kind of decimated by the credit crunch. But we're seeing it again. It's a competitive opportunity, to be honest with you, from my standpoint.
Well, I think it's so critical. That pendulum swings, and it has several times over my 46-year career in the industry, and we're watching it definitely come in. So talk about your strategy of mixing in a wholesale strategy and how you're accommodating that. I think that's really interesting.
Right. So Town, you know, has served all channels. That when I walked into the door, it was retail, it was consumer direct, it was wholesale, it was mini core and correspondent. Predominantly, you know, serving all of those channels focused on the credit union and financial institution space. But we took a hard look at what was going on in the industry, and our initial objective was to build the wholesale space and focus on the TPO space, primarily from our standpoint, the way we were built operationally. It was the easiest thing for us to lever quickly.
So as people are considering your company, are you seeing the desire to grow just exclusively wholesale, or what are some of the other channels that you're going to be focusing on?
We'd love to grow retail. Retail, you know, the market is what it is, right? Retail branch managers, retail organizations, loan officers are making a lot of money today. Their pipelines are full. So, again, easier to get into TPO quickly, we felt. And retail we're looking at today opportunistically. I'd love to find a retail organization, retail company that we could assimilate into our own organization. But our focus is not just TPO, not just wholesale. The focus is retail. But we're being patient. We're looking for the right opportunity and the right people and the right timing.
Well, you hit some real key points. Right people, right timing. Let's start with the people part of it, Mark. When you consider the right fit for Town Mortgage Company, how would you frame that up? What is a right fit, the right people?
So I don't know if you might chuckle at this answer, but in terms of a leader on the retail side, you know, a lot of things go into being a good retail leader, right? Work ethic, dedication, all of those things. But one thing I point to is what I've called in the past the beer test. Can I sit down? Can I talk with them over a beer? Are they friendly? Are they personable? Are they going to fit into the culture? Those types of things. So I look a lot at the person in addition to, you know, what they've done in the business, quite frankly.
So how important is their past and their knowledge of the industry versus that finding someone that has the quote unquote the right fit?
Well, it's important. So from a retail perspective, you know, volume critical, right? Are they producing?
Yep.
What does their compensation look like? Does it make sense? Does it fit from a comparison standpoint, peer? Does it fit in terms of our pricing? All of those things are very important, right? They need to be a producer, but at the end of the day, they need to fit culturally into who we are also.
You talked a little bit earlier about timing. What are you seeing as good timing for companies? I'm looking at the age of the industry. There's some people aging out, so there's people wanting to exit, so that creates opportunities for growing companies like yourselves. But there's also new people coming into the industry. Do you prefer one over the other, or do you have a plan and a strategy to accommodate both?
I don't prefer one over the other. I actually prefer a mix. So the successful retail groups that I've managed in the past have exactly that. Have a mix of older, experienced loan officers, potentially a branch manager, older, but also complemented with younger people that they're developing, that they've been successful developing. So really looking for, you know, the perfect branch would be a branch that has a mix of old and new, someone with a lot of experience, but also those folks that can help bring younger originators into the business with their knowledge.
Let's talk a little bit about geographic markets. What geographical markets are you preferring over others, or are you nationwide?
We're nationwide today. However, having said that, we're Midwest and Southeast centric. I have no preference over market, to be quite honest with you. To the extent we can find successful people doing business in markets where we can make our target margins, I'm good. We pretty much blanket the U.S. We're not in every state. We're in 43 states from an origination standpoint.
Mark, you've mentioned a few times that you have a business model. It sounds like you have discipline around margins. Tell me about margins and how you have determined what those will be and how disciplined are you to maintaining those margins?
You know, sometimes you're at the mercy of what's going on in the market, and your target margin, you know, may not be the margin you're making. So what we try to do is we try to position ourselves from a pricing standpoint, from a margin standpoint, to be somewhere in the 8 to 15 range in terms of competitiveness. So competitive, you know, very competitive, not at the top, and then we let our operations, our service, do the talking after that.
Let's talk a bit about service and what drives it. We're seeing a lot of focus on technology, as well as the importance to have a process. How do you balance those two?
So the focus clearly on technology, and it has been in this industry for quite some time. I think it can go a lot further. But we try at every step to link our process with the technology we've got available, and then to take a look at processes that we could improve that may have a technology de-link, for lack of a better word, and look and see if we can improve the technology, adjust the technology to fit what we're looking at in terms of our new process.
Do the technologies that you are selecting and employing applicable to both the wholesale and retail, or are they somewhat exclusive to the channels that you're originating through?
The technology that we employ today is, I'll give a throwdown for Encompass, right? There's a pitch. I should get paid for that. But we employ Encompass, and it serves all of the channels. And we've tweaked Encompass in our own ways to deal with nuances in the wholesale world or in the retail world or in the mini core and core world. So, but Encompass is our base technology.
Mark, you have a number of channels. What are some of the things that you'd want our listeners to know or people that are considering joining you to know about each one of the channels?
Well, there are a couple of things. We service all channels, and it's almost a default because we really have focused in the past, and we plan on continuing on focusing on credit unions and small financial institutions. So we do business with these companies from a retail standpoint. They're originating the loans. From a retail standpoint, where we have loan officers in their offices originating the loans. From a consumer direct standpoint, where they're too small, they don't have staff, and we utilize our consumer direct channel for them to originate loans in. And if they have originators and they have backroom, they originate on a wholesale basis or a mini core basis or a correspondent basis. And our pledge to them is that we won't sell to an aggregator. We are a Fannie Freddie Ginnie seller servicer, and we sell their loans only to Fannie Freddie Ginnie, and we service their loans for life. So it's a customer for life thing, I guess you could call it.
I like that. Customer life. Les, question?
Yes. Mark, I find it fascinating how you have carved a niche in the TPO space to service community banks and credit unions. And in doing that, that is a different culture than the classic non-financial originator. Can you kind of talk about the cultural differences? What type of culture do you develop within your organization in reaching out to those companies with a different culture?
So it's stickier, but it's also more difficult to break through. If a credit union or a financial institution is so small that they're not doing loans, the biggest challenge is convincing them why it makes sense for them to service their customers from a mortgage standpoint and show them what they could make in addition to what they're making on their day-to-day business. And I also say it's a challenge because these institutions, to get approved, it's a process, right? It's a process in terms of meeting with management, but it's also a process in terms of them getting in front of their board and getting the approval process going down the path. So it's a more elongated sales process, but at the end of the day, those customers are stickier. They're committed to doing business with you and only you. So it's a little bit different than the broker relationship from that standpoint.
You also have a different culture in how you reach out on TPO versus having a retail organization. With a retail organization, we see that the recent numbers from MBA have been really strong applications, and refi has been different. Can you kind of compare and contrast refi and purchase and the cultural difference of TPO serving community banks and credit unions versus a retail organization, you being a non-financial?
Yeah, so our, you know, this year our refi percentage, when you compare it to industry, falls, you know, well short. We're running less than 50% refinance. And part of that is attributable to what you just mentioned, who we're doing business with today, the fact that we don't have much of a traditional retail group, the fact that we have a fairly small consumer direct group, and that the bulk of our business is coming from smaller financial institutions. So it's, you know, it's affected our mix in that way, which I'm not complaining about, but has driven the purchase business to be a far greater percentage and continues to be a greater percentage than our refi percentage today.
Let's talk about once you've identified someone that you're interested in having a relationship, either acquiring them or employing them, what is the process you go through, Mark?
Well, employing is a good question. And what I've focused on in the past and what we're focusing on today is, you know, I've been around a long time, not quite as long as you, David, but just knowing a lot of folks in the industry who are strong, successful, who, again, fit into the culture, and going after those individuals. So that's what we've spent, you know, a fair amount of the year doing, is trying to recruit those individuals that have worked either with us or side by side, or that we know very well in the industry, who are good and successful and have a following, and going after them. And let me add that it's a lot easier, well, if they like you, it's a lot easier than trying to recruit someone who knows nothing about you or possibly the organization that you're running.
Yeah, familiarity and having some form of relationship would clearly be an advantage. But certainly you are looking beyond your network to attract other people. Is that correct?
We are, yes.
So let's now contrast hiring someone versus acquiring some companies through mergers and acquisitions. What are the targets you're specifically looking at? Who's a good fit for you?
Oh, a good fit. So we would, you know, not to say we wouldn't be interested in an organization that focuses on TPO, because we would. But our interest primarily is on a retail organization or someone who focuses more on retail. It's a hole that we have yet to fill. We need retail, strong retail leadership, which we don't have, and we need a strong retail organization. So in terms of what that looks like, again, like I said earlier, it's someone who is pricing similar to how we're pricing. When you bring over a group, you don't want the assimilation to be disruptive. So from a retail standpoint, we're kind of a whiteboard in terms of we don't have a traditional retail organization. And as long as that organization from a metric standpoint fits in the range of what we're looking at in terms of profitability and has strong management, that's really what would attract us.
When you're looking at the process of actually bringing them on, talk about that. There's an initial interest, and then from there, how do you take them through that process, and what is the typical time frame for that?
Typical time frame, you know, in my experience, has varied greatly. I would hope from beginning to end that an understanding of the business and a commitment on either side can be, you know, locked down in 2 to 3 months. And then following that is the integration, right? The doing the deal and the integration. The key thing in terms of getting someone to understand us and wanting to be a part of Town Mortgage would really be meeting all of the key people, understanding what our processes were, if they worked, if they fit the processes that the group was coming from, or if they were better than the processes that the group was coming from. But I think that's very important, is taking a look at what our process is, life of the loan, we call it, and, you know, getting the target to understand that and let us know if that fits within what they're doing. It's important not only for them to understand our processes, but for us to understand where they're coming from. And to the extent we can make tweaks to that, that improve the overall process, that's extremely important.
Integrating their process with your processes and then their culture with yours, how do you go about that? We've watched many mergers and acquisitions fail afterwards because not enough time and attention was dedicated to those areas.
I've been a part of failures and successes. So I hope I learned from my past experience. If we're looking at a retail organization, like I said, we're a whiteboard. To the extent, going back to the culture, to the extent that really the senior leaders fit culturally, I think that's the most important thing. And to the extent that the individuals, the branch managers, the loan officers follow those senior leaders, that's extremely important.
Mark, when you're looking to expand an organization and grow an organization, you're doing it organically and also through acquisitions. What about the servicing side and growing servicing? What is your approach to mortgage servicing, and how do you look at it when evaluating a candidate if you're looking at an acquisition? And also, what type of targets do you have long-term for the size of a servicing portfolio?
Yeah, well, in the past, Town has accumulated servicing, but they've limited their accumulation of servicing to loans originated through the credit union and financial institution space. Since I've been there, we've increased that retention. So today we're retaining approximately 70-75% of what we originate. We're not retaining jumbos. We're not retaining non-QM stuff and a few other things. But our focus is to retain, I mean, we best X some things, but our focus is to try to retain as much as possible, particularly since we're now growing in the TPO space. And, you know, our strategy, if you will, is to employ the same tactics around customer for life in the TPO space that we've employed with our credit unions and financial institutions. So our plan is to grow servicing. We have a strong financial backer. We can grow, we can double our servicing today, which is about $3.5 billion without anything. But we have a strong financial backer in Monroe Capital out of Chicago who agrees with us in terms of what the strategy is and how we grow our TPO business.
That was my follow-up question concerning a servicing portfolio. The new world of mortgage banking is evolving into a very capital-intense business that it historically has not been. You mentioned about wholesale growing. Part of that's because the origination function itself can be somewhat low capital intensive. But this building a servicing portfolio, having the right type of products and a different products mix, and having a long-term sustainability so you can have a customer for life, requires capital. Could you expound upon that a little bit and your relationship with Monroe and how that works?
Yeah, no doubt it requires capital. And, you know, with what every time we get to a low point in interest rates, we get to a lower point, right? And that capital erodes.
So, pardon. Yeah.
Right. So are we going to zero, right? But to your point, the origination side, especially TPO, far less capital. And so the strategy customer for life is also a play on, you know, as servicing runs off, the play is to get that customer back on the origination side. And we're doing that today with credit unions and financial institutions. The question is, how successful will we be in the TPO space, in the traditional TPO space? And yeah, you mentioned Monroe or our backer. So Monroe invested in Town approximately 2014. And Town, I would say, I'll be kind, was not a success story from 14 through the end of 18. And despite that, the financial backer, Monroe, stayed behind Town, stayed behind the vision, which was a combination of the play with financial institutions and credit unions and growing the servicing portfolio. I came on board in December. Like I said, took a hard look at the business. We had many meetings with the backer, Monroe, in terms of where we thought we could take the business, where we thought we needed their expertise where we thought, when we thought we might need capital. And they've completely bought into our strategy in terms of building TPO sooner rather than later, being opportunistic on the retail side, looking for acquisitions that made sense, that were accretive, and building the servicing portfolio up from where we were building it prior to my arrival.
Mark, we've talked a lot about your strategy. We talked about where you're going, your financial backing, all very strong points. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think is really important that are listening to this podcast, that are considering making a move, you'd want them to know?
You know, we haven't talked about the team a whole lot. I talked a little bit about replacements and some things that we did in terms of improving the team, adding to the team. But I would say probably the thing that I look back and I say I'm most proud of is the existing team that was in place. And so they went through a lot of unsuccessful years. But the existing team that was in place, combined with the folks I brought on board, is extremely cohesive. They're all focusing, and they're all working in the same direction, which is, I mean, so important if you're going to be successful. So I'm a Michigan guy, right? And I'll say the team. But,
yes.
You know, I mean it. The team there is probably the best team I've been associated with in, you know, my 38 or 39 years in the business, to be honest.
That's good. Well, it's all about a team. You have the right people. It, like the book that Collins wrote, get all the right people on the bus, get all the right people off the bus, and you have a winning formula. And I think that's what you've done here. I'm very excited to have our listeners get a hold of you. What's the best way for people to reach you if they're wanting to learn more about Town Mortgage Company?
They can go to the website. They can get a hold of me at mjanson@townmortgage.com. Either of those courses of action are perfect.
Perfect. Les, thanks for joining in on this interview. Mark, thank you for taking time to share with us your vision and what's going on, the exciting things that are developing there at Town Mortgage Company. Appreciate you being here with us.
Yeah, thank you guys too. I appreciate your time.
It's always fun to listen to what's going on with specific lenders. Appreciate Mark coming on and being a part of the podcast today. Next week, we're going to be having a returning guest from May 6, 2019, in our Hot Topic interview, and he's going to be back, Barrett Burns of VantageScore. There's been some exciting developments in the world of mortgage credit, and you won't want to miss out on next week's podcast. Be sure to come back and tell others about it. Share this podcast link to your fellow associates. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, the MBA, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, the CMLA, as well as Velma, Knowledge Coop, Vidyard, and AI Assist. Folks, thanks so much for taking time to listen to this week's podcast. Again, share it with others, and have a great Thanksgiving.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.